Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Mikey, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 6th, 2024. Permian Basin may get four new power plants, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Power-hungry Permian Basin is in line to potentially receive four gas-fired power generation plants under the Texas Energy Fund, TEF. The fund was created by the Texas legislature through the Powering Texas Forward Act to provide grants and loans to finance construction, maintenance, modernization, and operation of electric facilities in the state. The Public Utility Commission, which administers the TEF, recently winnowed through 72 program applications totaling $24 billion, selecting 17 as possible recipients of $5.38 billion in low-interest loans. The 17 projects would add 9,781 megawatts in power generation to the electric grid. Four of those projects are in the Permian Basin, including a 1,350 megawatt combined cycle project in Reeves County proposed by Competitive Power Ventures, CPV Group LP, and GE Vernova. Vistra Corporation's 440 megawatt proposal was also selected. The Permian Power 1 will be built adjacent to Vistra's 325 megawatt Monahans gas-fired plant. The Permian Basin has a built-in customer base ready to go, Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. He broke that customer base into two parts: oil and gas companies who need the electricity as they convert their drilling rigs, frac spreads, and other equipment from generation to electric power, and non-oil gas customers. TXOGA is among a number of organizations working to bring additional power transmission capacity to the Permian Basin. Staples said S&P Global Commodity Insights had been retained to create forecasts of Permian Basin electric demand, and oil companies had been cooperating on those efforts to forecast future electric load demand. The 17 proposals will move on to the next round of the selection process, due diligence. In this process, the TEF administrator will evaluate whether each applicant can sufficiently support the claims in its application. Due diligence for each application is estimated to take 4 to 8 months. All approved applicants are expected to receive initial loan funds by December 31, 2025. The TEF will provide funding opportunities for electric generation projects, both inside and outside of the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, Power Region, through four programs: in ERCOT generation loans, in ERCOT completion bonus grants, outside ERCOT grants, and the Texas Backup Power Package. Applications were correlated to four major categories. Number one, project technical and regional attributes. Number two, project financial attributes. Number three, application sponsor history. And number four, application sponsor financial characteristics. As the final step in its evaluation process, staff and the TEF administrator reviewed two commission priorities: speed to market and ability to relieve known transmission constraints. Greenwood ISD's Darla Morrow named finalist, by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Darla Morrow, a dyslexia teacher at Greenwood ISD, is a finalist in the 2025 Texas Teacher of the Year program. The Texas Association of School Administrators, TASA, announced the six finalists on Wednesday, which will be interviewed by a panel of judges on October 24th. Morrow grew up in Greenwood and graduated from Greenwood High School. She attended Texas Tech University and earned her bachelor's in Human Development and Family Studies, and attended Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary to receive her master's degree in Christian Education. Morrow started her career in education as a kindergarten teacher in Plainview before pursuing her master's degree. After she graduated from the seminary, she moved to Plains and became a first grade teacher. She then took a break from teaching to stay home and raise her children before her family decided to return to Greenwood. "Our true roots are here. We farm and ranch, so we're truly tied to the land," Morrow said. "My oldest son was 5 at the time, and we were talking about him starting school. And he said, 'I'm going to move to Greenwood and live next door to grandmother and granddaddy and go to school in Greenwood.' That same year, Morrow returned to teaching and started as a second grade teacher at Greenwood Elementary School. "I always say that dyslexia chose me, not the other way around," Morrow said. She said she loved being a second grade teacher, and although she was trained to be a dyslexia teacher, she didn't plan to transition to the role. "I already had my classroom set up," Morrow said. "I got a call from my principal that they wanted me to interview for the dyslexia position." Morrow added that the transition from being in the classroom to being a dyslexia teacher was very different for her. "It's not about the curriculum of it for me," Morrow said. "It's those kids and making a difference in those kids, being able to fill those gaps and see them begin to soar, and seeing them get confident. It's very rewarding." Morrow said that she feels overwhelmed being a finalist for Teacher of the Year. "I look around and I see lots of people doing good things," Morrow said. "I see good teachers. I'm just doing my job and giving my best every day, because if I don't give my best to those kids, I'm failing them." TASA will have two state-level winners, the Elementary Teacher of the Year and the Secondary Teacher of the Year. Morrow is a finalist in the Secondary Teacher of the Year category. TASA will also choose one of the winners to represent Texas in the National Teacher of the Year program. The winners will be announced at an awards ceremony in Round Rock on October 25th. Public Safety Radio Project's latest innovation unveiled. Midland County launches new radio tower to enhance first responder communication. By B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland County Public Safety Radio Project unveiled its latest innovation to help boost communication for law enforcement and first responders within the Permian Basin. Justin Stevenson, Project Infrastructure Administrator for Midland County, thanked everyone for attending the ribbon-cutting Thursday at the Greenwood Radio Tower site, 3211 Farm to Market Road, 1379. "Most everyone here has had a part in the success of our project, and we are truly grateful for all your partnership, support, generosity, and the different ways that you contributed," Stevenson said. "Our radio system has been a work in progress for a little over 5 years now, and the final day arrived. Last Tuesday, we went live on the air on August 27th with the Midland County radio system." Stevenson said the Motorola system, with the addition of three radio towers in South Midland, will provide more capabilities than the Permian Basin has had before. Midland County Commissioner Luis Sanchez said he was excited to see the radio tower project finally come to fruition. He said the majority of funding for the project was via a federal grant called the COPS Grant. "A lot of these grants take a lot of work, and in collaboration with everybody here, we were able to come to where we are now," Sanchez said. Congressman August Pfluger, 11th District of Texas, said that when he first heard about the radio tower, he was reminded of one of the first missions that he flew in the Air Force without communication. "We never failed the mission because we didn't have the information," he explained to audience members attending the ribbon cutting. "The mission wasn't successful at times because we didn't have the right communication." Another factor Pfluger said was part of the funding for the COPS grant was the mass shooting that occurred in 2019. "It was extremely clear what the need was when you think back to the tragedy that happened here in 2019 and the ability to communicate across county lines, from the state and local level, between jurisdictions, from the police department to the sheriff's department to DPS," he said. "If you needed to talk to other federal agents that were here, this tower site here allows that to happen." The communication aspect plays a large role in the jobs of not only law enforcement, but first responders as well. Pfluger said, "Often the goal of would-be enemies is to jam communication lines. We did not have the right equipment at the time, and I think this tower site is the first key step to kicking off that ability, whether it's a tragedy that happens, like we had in 2019, or if it's just normal communication," he said. "There's a lot of activity in the Permian Basin. This is the world's leader of production of energy, and we need to protect that, and being able to have the ability for law enforcement, for first responders, and for those who are serving our community." Pfluger mentioned the radio tower site meets a national security need as well. "The Constitution is very clear when it talks about federal dollars being made available at the local level for the need of infrastructure. I can't think of a region that needs infrastructure more than the Permian Basin, quite frankly, in the entire United States, whether it's roads and making them safer, which we participate in, or whether it's the infrastructure to communicate better with our law enforcement and first responder network. This was an easy project to say yes to, and we worked very hard to acquire almost $700,000 that helped get this. Stevenson said despite the project being delayed due to COVID supply chain issues, the project continued to move forward. We started out over 5 years ago assessing our current infrastructure, and we realized that we needed to do some major upgrades, Stevenson explained. We had several coverage gaps throughout the county. Officers didn't have communications, and then we had a need for newer infrastructure. That conversation led us to do what we have today. We've built 3 new radio towers, one of which we are here standing on today, and 2 other towers. Additionally, Stevenson said Midland County had partnered with some state agencies to add communication equipment to their towers and upgrade existing sites. With a significant amount of technology and equipment, we have upgraded our dispatch center consoles and added several new features, some of which officers have available to them today. Another feature of the upgrades, Stevenson said, is working with a software vendor to get the mapping component upgraded, which he called another significant improvement. We will be able to see the officer's location in much more real time than we have today, he said. Another key ingredient in the recipe for better communication between multi-agencies within the Permian Basin was a committee dubbed the Permian Basin Regional Radio Committee. This committee has begun working on creating interoperability between agencies, so we now can talk between these agencies and not worry about another major incident happening, Stevenson said. It's in motion, and we'll have more details to come when that happens. The Midland County Public Safety Radio Project Initiative is a collaborative effort involving local and state agencies, including the City of Midland, City of Odessa, Ector County, and Petro Communications. Perfect football weather expected this weekend, by Trevor Halls. After several days of record-setting rains, the weather will be clearing up just in time for high school football games. Here's a look at National Weather Service forecasts for Texas teams of interest. Friday Night Lights. Legacy High is hosting Euless Trinity for a home game at Astound Broadband Stadium. The National Weather Service says skies will be clear Friday night and the low temperature will be 65 degrees. Northeast winds will blow at 5 to 10 miles per hour. There is a 10% chance of precipitation during the day. Midland High is traveling to El Paso to take on Pebble Hills. The evening forecast way out west is predicted to be mostly clear with a low around 68 degrees. It could be a bit windy, with east winds blowing between 9 and 16 miles per hour and gusts up to 23 miles per hour. Greenwood High, Midland Christian, and Trinity are all playing home games in Midland. The Rangers host Sweetwater, the Mustangs take on Bishop Lynch, the Chargers take the field against Abilene Christian School, the high school, not the Division I league, and Holy Cross host Balmorea. TLCA is traveling to Grand Falls Royalty and Grand Falls, which will see weather similar to Midland, though there is a 20% chance of rain during the day. College Saturday. UTPB notched a home win at Ratliff Stadium last week against Western New Mexico. This week, they head to the Thunderbolt to challenge Colorado State University Pueblo. The forecast Saturday night in Pueblo, Colorado, calls for partly cloudy skies with a low near 57 degrees. East winds will blow at about 5 miles per hour and become west-northwest as the evening progresses. Texas Tech is also on this road after topping Abilene Christian, the Division I league, not the high school, last week in Lubbock. The Red Raiders will face Washington State for a night game. Pullman, Washington, will be under a heat advisory that expires Saturday evening, when it will be mostly cloudy with a low around 56 degrees. Texas Longhorns. The number 3 are traveling to the Big House to take on number 10 Michigan. Saturday in Ann Arbor, Michigan, is forecast to be mostly sunny with a high near 62 and northwest winds at about 10 miles per hour, gusting as high as 22 miles per hour. Texas A&M is staying in Aggieland to host McNeese State. College Station will be sunny with a high near 87 degrees. Northeast winds will blow between 10 and 15 miles per hour. Gusts could be as high as 20 miles per hour. NFL Sunday. The Dallas Cowboys are traveling to Cleveland to face the Browns for its season opener. Cleveland will be sunny with a high of 69 degrees. Lake Erie is still warm this time of year. On Thursday, the water temperature was 76 degrees in Cleveland, according to the Great Lakes Observing System. The Houston Texans opened their season in Indianapolis, where patchy fog in the morning will give way to sunshine after 10 p.m., with a high near 73. Lucas Oil Stadium has a retractable roof and window. Whether or not they will be open is a game day decision. Texas Energy Fund scrutinized after dubious loan applicant, by Philip Jankowski, The Dallas Morning News. Austin. Texas energy regulators have rejected a previously approved application for a government-backed loan after learning it contained false information and was filed by a woman who had been convicted of a federal crime. Eagle's Power application for a Texas Energy Fund low-interest loan intended to speed construction of natural gas-powered electrical plants was among 17 the Public Utility Commission accepted last week. Eagle, requesting an undisclosed amount in its loan application, said power-generating giant NextEra Energy was a partner in a planned power plant that could power about 325,000 homes. NextEra notified the commission Tuesday that it was included in the application without NextEra's knowledge or consent. The total slate of approved applications amounted to 9,781 megawatts of power generation and $5.38 billion in loans. The Eagles project's capacity would have been 1,292 megawatts. The director of the Public Utility Commission rejected Eagles' application late Wednesday, and the situation became a focal point of a Senate committee hearing Thursday as senators questioned the wisdom of doubling the $5 billion in state money that has already been devoted to the Texas Energy Fund. The fund was intended to include $10 billion for loans and other incentives when it was created by the legislature in 2023. Less than a week after utility commissioners approved Eagle's initial application among a slate of applicants, the agency learned that the head of Eagle, Kathleen Smith, was convicted of a federal crime in 2017 in what the Department of Justice characterized as an embezzlement scheme. The Eagle project was the second largest commission approved. Smith did not return a phone call, text message, or email seeking comment. Thomas Gleason, chairman of the Public Utility Commission, said the application contained potentially fraudulent information during a Senate Finance Committee hearing in which senators grilled him about how Eagle's application slipped by the commission and the auditing firm Deloitte, which has a $107 million state contract to vet Texas Energy Fund applicants. This could have been found with a Google review, a Google search, Gleason said in a tense back and forth with senators. That's the point, replied Senator Joan Hoffman, Republican of Houston. This doesn't make sense, sir. I'm sorry. There's talk of another $5 billion, she added. I think you're going to have to clean up your act. The Finance Committee clash highlighted the Public Utility Commission's new duties since the Texas legislature and voters approved the $10 billion Texas Energy Fund in 2023. The commission's role as the power industry's regulator was expanded to include processes similar to a bank, vetting and approving 3% interest government-backed loans for companies it regulates. It also cast a shadow over a program that has been lauded by Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who vowed to add another $5 billion and funding after power-generating companies showed strong interest in the low-interest loans. The program is designed to encourage the construction of natural gas-fueled power plants through the loan program and taxpayer-funded rebates. It also includes nearly $3 billion in funding for backup power generation and infrastructure in parts of Texas outside of the ERCOT grid, such as the Northern Panhandle and El Paso. The Public Utility Commission is seeking a partial refund of its contract with Deloitte, which did not respond to a message seeking comment. Senator Paul Bettencourt, Republican of Houston, said he was aghast that Eagle's application slipped by Deloitte, which had multiple contracts with the state, and that the Utility Commission needs to be more vigilant. You need to find out the truth before you not only embarrass the state of Texas, but you put taxpayer dollars at risk, Bettencourt said. That's the bottom line here. Suspect charged in deputy's fatal shooting, by Juan A. Lozano, Associated Press. Houston. A suspect has been charged with murder in the fatal shooting of a Texas deputy constable who had stopped at a Houston intersection as he drove to work, authorities said Thursday. The announcement at the murder charge came on the same day as the deputy, Meir Husseini, was remembered at his funeral as a Palestinian American who cared deeply for his family, his Islamic faith, and his community. He was a community servant who strove to make the world a better place and a safer place. Safety, security, and community well-being were manifested in his community service. Abdurrahman Hejazi, the religious scholar for Masjid al-Salem Mosque in suburban Houston, said during Husseini's funeral services, Athir Muradi had been charged with one count of murder in the killing of Husseini on Tuesday, said Joe Steinbaker, a Harris County District Attorney's Office spokesperson. Authorities say Muradi got out of his vehicle, walked up to Husseini's SUV, and fired multiple times. The deputy was pronounced dead at a Houston hospital. Police are still investigating a motive for the shooting. According to authorities, Husseini was not in uniform when he was shot and had been driving his personal vehicle. Husseini had worked as a Harris County constable since 2021. Muradi, 40, was being held on Thursday at the county jail in neighboring Galveston County after he led authorities on a chase that ended in the waters of the Texas Gulf Coast, about 60 miles from West Houston, where the shooting happened. Authorities said Sergeant Nick Yelly, a Galveston deputy city marshal, spotted Muradi's vehicle in Galveston hours after the shooting. I think it was just fate that I happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I was utilizing the skills that I've learned over my career in law enforcement, Yelly said, according to a Galveston Police Department news release. Muradi then led authorities on a short chase before driving his car into Galveston Bay. He got out of his vehicle and tried to swim from officers, who pulled them aboard a police boat. Muradi is being held without bond in Galveston County on a charge of evading arrest. He was expected to be returned to Houston, but authorities could not immediately say when that would happen. Court and jail records did not list an attorney who could speak on Muradi's behalf. Harris County prosecutors have filed a motion asking a judge to set Muradi's bond at $5 million. Mahir was an American by choice and was a proud Palestinian American, Hejazi said during Husseini's funeral service, which was attended by officers from various law enforcement agencies and several local officials. He loved the freedoms we enjoy here in America and wished for these freedoms to be all around the world. Phelan names former Governor Perry as advisor, by Aaron Torres, The Dallas Morning News. Austin. Former Governor Rick Perry will serve as a senior advisor to Texas House Speaker Dade Phelan, whose continued leadership of the House is being challenged by three fellow Republicans. Perry, the longest-serving governor in Texas history, will serve in a volunteer capacity until the start of next year's legislative session on January 14th, the Speaker's office announced Thursday. From his time as governor, lieutenant governor, agriculture commissioner, and state representative, he understands every facet of the legislative process, and that will be a tremendous asset as we work to strengthen our state's economy, improve education, and ensure every member's voice is heard in the Texas House this session, Phelan, Republican Beaumont, said in a statement. Perry joins Phelan's team as the twice-elected speaker faces a difficult battle to remain leader of the Texas House. Three Republicans, running as more conservative options, have announced bids to replace Phelan, and several other GOP representatives have been testing the waters. Selecting a speaker will be among the House's first duties when the legislature convenes in January. Perry campaigned for Phelan in the 2024 Republican primary and runoff as a counterbalance to Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and Attorney General Ken Paxton, who accused Phelan of being responsible for conservative legislation failing to pass in the House. Phelan came in second to David Covey, who was endorsed by former President Donald Trump, Patrick and Paxton, in the primary but defeated the challenger by 2 points in the May runoff. Speaking at the Texas Tribune Festival on Thursday, Perry said he is joining Phelan because he believes he can broker less divisive but important issues like mental health for veterans and energy policy. Dade asked, and I said, "Yes, I'll be happy to help," Perry said. "I helped in his election. I think he's a fair and honest broker." Perry will advise Phelan heading into the House vote for Speaker. Three representatives, Representatives Tom Oliverson of Cypress, Shelby Slauson of Stephenville, and David Cook of Mansfield, are challenging Phelan. all three have said they would end the practice of putting Democrats in charge of legislative committees. In March, Phelan said he would continue appointing Democrats as committee chairs, arguing it rewards expertise, fosters bipartisanship, and helps ensure the legislature can pass bills. Phelan's announcement said Perry would help foster collaboration with House lawmakers, helping to proactively solicit input and make recommendations for improving House and Speaker's office operations for all members. Perry joins another recent addition to Phelan's team, Mike Toomey, a prominent lobbyist who was chief of staff to Perry and Governor Bill Clements, was named Phelan's chief of staff last month. State would need $81.5 billion a year to end property taxes, by Joshua Fetchter, the Texas Tribune. Texas would have to spend tens of billions of dollars to get rid of the state's property taxes, state budget officials said Wednesday, a reality check on some conservatives who want to end them once and for all. Republican lawmakers have been on a years-long push to bring down the state's property taxes, among the highest in the nation. Some Texas conservatives have long dreamt of getting rid of at least some property taxes altogether, an idea others have criticized as unrealistic, given the gargantuan cost of doing so. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is skeptic of doing away with property taxes, tasked lawmakers earlier this year with tallying the cost. Now lawmakers have those figures in hand. Getting rid of all property taxes collected by school districts would have cost the state $39.5 billion in tax year 2023, figures presented to the Texas Senate Finance Committee by the Legislative Budget Board show. School property taxes, which pay for costs like teacher salaries and new facilities, represent the largest chunk of a property owner's tax bill. In addition, the state would have to shell out another $42 billion to cover the property taxes collected by cities, counties, and special taxing districts last year. All told, the state would have had to spend $81.5 billion to completely eliminate all local property taxes. That's more than half of the $144 billion that lawmakers allocated for Texas's current two-year budget. Spending that much money on tax cuts would significantly hamper the state's ability to pay for other costs, and would likely require a significant sales tax hike, lawmakers said Wednesday. There appeared to be little appetite among committee members to do so. This is not something that you can find $81 billion on a per-year basis and not have a major impact on the remaining sales tax rates, because that is a huge amount of money to be able to replicate, said State Senator Paul Bettencourt, a Houston Republican and Patrick's chief lieutenant on property taxes. Texas doesn't levy its own property tax. Instead, cities, counties, school districts, and special taxing entities collect property taxes. Property tax bills have climbed over much of the last decade as the state's economy boomed and property values and tax rates rose. To try to rein in rising property tax bills, state lawmakers have spent billions of dollars and put tighter limits on how much more in property taxes school districts and local governments can collect. Last year, legislators approved a $12.7 billion package consisting of targeted tax breaks for homeowners and money for school districts to drive down how much they collect from property owners. For homeowners, those efforts appear to be working. The amount of property taxes school districts collected fell by nearly 10% between 2022 and 2023, according to figures provided by the Texas Comptroller's Office. Total property tax collections, however, fell less than 1% in that time frame, driven by a 10.3% increase in the amount of property taxes collected by cities, counties, and special taxing districts. The state's top Republicans have signaled they're not done slashing property taxes. Patrick, the leader of the Texas Senate, and House Speaker Dade Phelan each tasked legislators in their chambers with exploring more cuts before they reconvene in Austin for next year's legislative session. Governor Greg Abbott said earlier this year that the legislature should continue to hammer away at property taxes until we get rid of the school property tax rate here in the state of Texas. Doing away with the property tax rate that pays for school districts' maintenance and operations has long been a dream among some Texas conservatives, but proposals to do so have been dead on arrival in the legislature. Still, some conservative thinkers contend the state should chip away at property taxes over time until they're eliminated. Property taxes are not just a financial burden, said Vance Ginn, a conservative economist who runs his own economic consulting firm. They are fundamentally immoral. Judge allows fresh evidence against Trump, by Eric Tucker, Associated Press, Washington. The federal election interference case against Donald Trump inched forward Thursday, with a judge permitting prosecutors to file court documentations later this month that could detail unflattering allegations about the former president as the Republican nominee enters the final weeks of his White House run. The order came hours after a court hearing, the first in the case in nearly a year, in which U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan sparred with a Trump lawyer who accused the government of trying to rush ahead with an illegitimate indictment in the run-up to the 2024 presidential election. Chutkan made clear she would not let the upcoming election affect how she proceeds, turning aside defense efforts to delay the process, while also acknowledging that the case is nowhere close to a trial date. "There's no rush to judgment here," Chutkan said. Prosecutors and defense lawyers are at odds over the next steps in the case after the Supreme Court narrowed the scope of the prosecution by ruling that former presidents are entitled to broad immunity from criminal charges. The dueling proposals and testy courtroom exchanges Thursday reflected the extent to which the justices' July opinion had upended the path of the case that charges Trump with plotting to overturn the result of the 2020 election before the Capitol riot on January 6, 2021. By day's end, she permitted prosecutors to file by September 26th a legal brief that could include fresh details about Trump's failed efforts to cling to power 4 years ago. The brief is meant to defend a revised and stripped-down Trump indictment that special counsel Jack Smith's team filed last week to comply with the Supreme Court's immunity opinion. "The filing is expected to include detailed allegations from the investigation," said Thomas Windham, a member of Smith's team. Trump lawyer John Lauro objected to the filing of the brief before the defense team has had a chance to seek the indictment's dismissal, and during the sensitive time before the election. "This process is inherently unfair, particularly during the sensitive time that we're in," Lauro said. The comment drew a rebuke from Chutkan, who said that the timing of the election was not relevant to how the case should proceed. "This court is not concerned with the electoral schedule," the judge said. At another point, she suggested that the defense was trying to delay the case because of the forthcoming election, cautioning, "That's not going to be a factor I consider at all." Another tense encounter occurred when Lauro told Chutkan that the case concerned momentous issues. "We are talking about the presidency of the United States," he said. Chutkan shot back, "I'm not talking about the presidency of the United States. I'm talking about a four-count indictment." The new indictment filed by Smith's team last week removed allegations related to Trump's attempts to use the Justice Department's law enforcement powers to undo the election results, conduct for which the Supreme Court said he enjoyed immunity. But the Trump team believes the new indictment did not go far enough to comply with the 6-3 ruling, in part because it left intact allegations that Trump badgered his vice president, Mike Pence, to refuse to certify the counting of the electoral votes, Lauro said. "We may be dealing with an illegitimate indictment from the get-go," Lauro said. He told Chutkan that the Supreme Court's opinion required the outright dismissal of the case, a position the judge made clear she did not accept. She bristled again when he suggested that prosecutors were guilty of a rush to judgment. "This case has been pending for over a year," Chutkan said, referencing the fact that the matter has been frozen since last December while Trump pursued his immunity appeal. "We are hardly sprinting to the finish here," she added. We all know that whatever my ruling on immunity is, it's going to be appealed, and the taking of that appeal will again stay this case. So no one here is under any illusion that we are sprinting towards any particular trial date." The Supreme Court held that former presidents are immune from prosecution for the exercise of their core constitutional functions and are presumptively immune for all other official duties. It now falls to Chutkan to determine which of the acts in the four-count indictment are official or not, and which can remain part of the case in light of the opinion. Neither side envisions a trial happening before Election Day, especially given the amount of work ahead. Pushing back on the defense's claims that the special counsel wants to move too quickly, Windham noted that Trump's lawyers filed a lengthy brief seeking to overturn his New York hush money conviction and dismiss the case less than 2 weeks after the Supreme Court's ruling in July. "The defense can move comprehensively, quickly, and well. So can we," Thomas Windham said. The hearing ended with the judge issuing an order about future dates in the case. Trump was not in the courtroom and gave an economic speech in New York, though a not guilty plea was entered on his behalf for the revised indictment. Smith attended the hearing. Defense lawyers said they intend to file multiple motions to dismiss the case, including one that piggybacks off a Florida judge's ruling that said Smith's appointment was unconstitutional. The case is one of two federal prosecutions against Trump. The other, charging him with illegally hoarding classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, Florida, was dismissed in July by U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, who said Smith's appointment as special counsel was unlawful. Rangers Butts dedicates season to late father, by Oscar Leroy, sports editor. Greenwood senior linebacker Landon Butts said, even though many of the players are back from last year, it feels like a brand new football team. New attitude and renewed sense of confidence has Butts and the Rangers believing that this year will be much better than in 2023, when the team went 3-9 in Brian Hill's first year as head coach. That was evident in the season opener when the Rangers got a 42-19 victory at Childress last week. I felt more confident than going into any game last year, said Butts about last week's game. I just feel like we are all in. We all have a brotherhood now, and I feel like we didn't have that same relationship last year. Having those connections and knowing we have each other's backs, it makes me feel more confident facing an opponent because I've practiced with those guys every single day for the last 6 months. The Rangers 1-0 will look to build on that win last week when they host former district rival Sweetwater 0-1 at 7 p.m. Friday at J.M. King Memorial Stadium for senior night. It will be a bittersweet moment for Butts as he won't have his father, Jeremy, in the stands to watch him play. Jeremy unexpectedly passed away last December, which left Landon having to take care of his three younger brothers. Landon said up until last year, his inspiration was to play for his older brother Riley, a member of the 2019 state semifinalist team at Greenwood and current linebacker at Howard Payne University. Now his inspiration is playing for the memory of his father. I'm kind of dedicating this season to him because he always loved to come to watch my football games, Butts said. I'm kind of playing for him now, and honestly, all my family, too. Butts said he is grateful to have football as part of his life, as working out and going to the gym have always been a great way to let go of stress and worry. Anytime I'm feeling down or feel like I can't go anywhere, all I have to realize is that I have to hold up an image for my little brothers that are looking up to me, he said. If I can't lead, how are they going to feel? I feel football has always been an escape for me. The weight room has always been an escape for me, just to get my mind off whatever it is. When football season rolls around, I really don't have time to be sad or be down about anything, because I'm so excited to play the game I love. Hill said he can see the passion in Butts, whether it's in practice or on the football field. I'm not certain there's a person on our team that takes more pride in being a Greenwood Ranger, Hill said. Doing something for the Rangers means extra something for Landon. He is an incredibly cerebral linebacker. He's able to put us in the right calls and the right checks at the right times. I think the growth we've had on defense is because of the growth that Landon has quite frankly demanded from his teammates. He's not only gotten better, but he holds other players on defense to a very high standard. Personally, I could not be prouder of Landon and everything he has overcome the last year. I don't think we would have the defense that we have this year without him. Defensive growth. Butts' development has also played a part in the development of the Greenwood defense, which seems to be improved from last year. Butts said it seems everybody on that side of the ball has been dedicated to becoming a better unit this year. Last year, we had some starters on defense who missed practice multiple times during the week, he said. This year, we've all got it together. We have a punishment set for missing practice, so everyone is there and we're all going 100%. Last year, I was just trying to go hit every single time. This year, I'm making more time to focus on my reads and do what I'm supposed to do, even if I'm not getting all the glory. Someone else is going to make a tackle, but I did my job so someone else could do their job. I feel that's going to account for more team success. Butts also has great chemistry with junior middle linebacker Dakota Underhill, who was moved up to varsity and played alongside Butts for most of the 2023 season. I never talked to Dakota until he moved up to varsity, said Butts, who plays the weak side position. I don't think he played linebacker before he got moved up. Having been in the linebacker spot, I tried to teach him some stuff. I feel now me and him are super close and super tight. We are clicking and we know how each other plays. To see the player he's become, he's super talented and he's a good linebacker. I'm glad we got him into that position. Being that kind of leader is important for Butts, and he says he's grown into the role since last year. Sometimes last year I felt like I couldn't lead as much because I wasn't a senior, he said. It took until about mid-season to figure out somebody else has to do it if nobody else was. Even if you're a sophomore or a junior. I feel like this year I am a team leader, and I feel it's all on me and all on my age group to provide leadership to the other guys, make sure their minds are right going into games and practices, and make sure they don't get too hard on themselves because we're all learning as the season goes on. I feel it's important to keep those relationships tight and hold each other accountable. The accountability from players such as Butts may have the Rangers thinking big in 2024. Center Author Was Born to Be a Rebel by Christopher Hadorn, staff writer. Legacy senior center Peyton Arthur doesn't take being a Rebel football player for granted. The 6'3", 285-pound Arthur has been dreaming of being an LHS varsity player ever since the third grade. Some are born to bleed maroon, as Arthur's father, Blake, played for head coach Earl Miller and graduated in 1992 from Lee. His mother, Laura, is a teacher at LHS, and his sister, Palin, is a Rebel cheerleader. Arthur has known Clint Hartman since the Rebels' head coach arrived in 2016 when the center was a youth football player for the Colts in the Greater Midland Football League. I've been waiting to be a Rebel since I was a kid, Arthur said. As long as I can remember, I've been coming to these games. It's been a lot of fun. I remember like watching them on Fridays and then playing peewee football on Saturdays. I was wanting to be them. It's been a lot of fun being in their shoes finally. Friday is one of those exciting matchups that Arthur had always dreamed about, as the Rebels, 0-1, host Euless Trinity, 1-0, in a battle of former three-time state champions at 7 p.m. at Estown Broadband Stadium. It is a rematch of the 2023 Class 6A Division 1 area playoff that Arthur started in, which the Rebels won 57-55 in double overtime. Trinity is one of the most celebrated programs in the state as its team, with a number of Tongan players, entertains fans by performing the Tongan war dance called the Sipi Tao before games. It's fun to see them do that, Arthur said. I remember last year they waited for us to come out. It didn't really faze us. We kind of ignored it and played our game. They came out with a lot of emotions, and I feel like they are going to do the same this year when they come out. So it's going to be an intense game. Arthur had a stellar first season on varsity as a junior, earning District 2, 6A, first team honors, while earning a 98% grade on assignments. This year, Arthur has been voted team captain and is the anchor of the Rebel offensive line in the middle where he makes pre-snap calls. The one thing the young man always wanted to do was be a starter, be a good football player, Hartman said. His family comes from it, and they are very, very huge supporters, Hartman added. But he's got great feet. He's very physical, he's very strong, and everything he's got he's had to work for. Arthur has had help along the way as he's come through the Rebel pipeline. Arthur plays the same position as one of his mentors, Seth Heller, who started for the Rebels from 2019 to 21. My junior years and freshman year, Seth Heller was definitely one of my favorites, Arthur said. He was always good to me, too. He treated me like a little brother, and I appreciate that now. It's helped me get to where I want to be, too. Arthur realizes that it's now on him to give back and be helpful to the Rebel freshmen and junior high kids. He also embraces being the leader now on the Rebels' offensive line that is trying to gel with only two full-time starters back. It's real cool to see these guys grow, too, and help them out, Arthur said. I feel like we are going to have a good line. We are not where we need to be, but we're going to get there, and we are going to get there as fast well. Arthur is likely to play football at the college level as he currently holds offers from UT Permian Basin, Angelo State, East Central University in Oklahoma, and Howard Payne University. Hartman says Arthur is instrumental to the Rebels' success this year and will play a major role when the team turns its season around. The center touches the ball every play, Hartman said. The first part is having a good center. Trinity will probably put a big nose on him, so that's what you've got to have. A guy who is physical and tough. I know that he can do it. Arthur is eager to get back on the gridiron on Friday after the Rebels lost 61-0 to number 15 ranked Allen in their season opener. "We've been hearing about it," Arthur said. "Not only at school in the locker room, but I hear about it at home too. It's a bad taste. I'm ready to get it out." Stability at Corner with Waters, Brandon, by Christopher Hadorn, staff writer. Midland High senior cornerbacks Michael Waters and Blade Brandon have been through the battles together. The duo got thrown to the fire into the starting lineup as sophomores and have since blossomed into a pair of steady veterans that give the Bulldogs stability on the back end of their defense. Brandon earned District 2 6A first-team honors at corner after returning an interception for a touchdown and registering 10 pass breakups as a junior, while Waters had 70 tackles, a fumble recovery, and 4 pass breakups for MHS in 2023. Brandon and Waters aim to get the Bulldogs 0-1 their first win of the season when they visit El Paso Pebble Hills 0-1 at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time Friday at Socorro ISD Student Activities Complex 2. The cornerbacks have already made their presence felt as Brandon had the defense's big play with an interception in a 48-24 loss to number 7 ranked South Lake Carroll in the season opener. "Day in, day out, you know what you are going to get from them," MHS football coach Thad Forden said. "They work hard in the weight room. They work hard on the practice field. They just have a lot of care for our program. When you have a lot of care, you have a chance to do some good stuff. I'm just proud of those guys and everything they do for our program. They lead on and off the field. They just continue to get better. Having to play as sophomores, it's no fun for a lot of people. It's tough. There's a lot of growing pains. They played a bunch as sophomores. They had good junior years, and I just expect them to keep getting better and keep leading our defense this year." Brandon started from the beginning of the 2022 season as a sophomore and made a sudden impact with 2 interceptions in the home opener when MHS beat Lubbock Coronado 27-21. Waters had a real baptism by fire, making his debut in the starting lineup as a sophomore during District 2 to 6A play. "It was definitely almost a roller coaster," Waters said. "I didn't play during the first 5 games or so. I came during district and started. It was definitely something I had to get used to, especially playing corner. It's a really demanding position. You do a lot. You have to be very athletic. As a sophomore, going against high-class receivers, it was definitely challenging. But it made me a way better player and the person I am now." Waters and Brandon now have the tough-minded disposition to handle the ebbs and flows of the cornerback position, where a first catch surrendered is easily noticed by everyone in the stadium. "It takes confidence," Waters said. "You are on an island almost. It's you and one other guy. Most of the time you don't have help. You just have to go on to the next play. You can't think about the play before and just keep moving on." There's a lot of similarities between Brandon and Waters, as both claim they stand at 5'11", 175 pounds. Both are held in high regard in the locker room, as Brandon was voted team captain, while Waters serves on the leadership council. The two are close friends that have been playing on the same team since they were playing in the Greater Midland Football League as third graders. "We've gotten real close," Brandon said. "We hang out off the field quite a bit. On the field, we're just constantly pushing each other. Anytime we're doing drills, anytime we're going against each other as a team, it's always me and Mike going at it. It's definitely a relationship that we've built upon competition. We've definitely made each other better over the years." Waters is arguably one of the best athletes in the Permian Basin, as he won the 2024 District 2 to 6A triple jump title. Waters acknowledges that Brandon can bench more than him in the weight room. "Despite their differences in some aspects, they play the same brand of cornerback. Coach Kyle Wuffel has us doing the same stuff," Brandon said. "We're focused on being physical. We're focused on being fast. Be hard on the line. Make it hard for a receiver to get their route off. I'd say our style of game is pretty similar. He's got on the speed a little bit, but other than that, we're really just focused on being the most physical cornerbacks in our district." Even though they might have exceeded some outsiders' expectations, Brandon said the Dogs could have played more competitively against Carroll had they executed some small things correctly. MHS has focused on cleaning up the little mistakes and playing a more complete game against Pebble Hills Friday. "Going into this week, it's just about getting back to where we need to be and definitely playing with a chip on our shoulder, especially going all the way to El Paso," Waters said. "It's definitely going to be a challenge, but we are definitely up for it." Rodriguez leads the Mustangs on both sides of the ball. by Oscar Leroy, sports editor. There's no question that Midland Christian's Boston Rodriguez loves to compete. So when he was asked to start on both sides of the ball for the Mustang football team, Rodriguez was more than willing to take on the challenge. And not only is he starting at both wide receiver and at safety, he's been playing those positions rather well, as he's a key contributor for the Mustangs at both positions. Playing both ways is definitely an accomplishment, a goal of mine, Rodriguez said. It takes a lot of effort. You have to play way harder. The harder I practice, the easier it is to make a play in game for me. Rodriguez and the Mustangs, 0-1, look to make a lot of plays at 7 p.m. Friday when they host Dallas Bishop Lynch, 1-0 for homecoming at Gordon Autry Field. I'm really excited, and I think our team is ready to bounce back, Rodriguez, whose team is coming off a 23-0 loss at UIL Class 4A Division 2 Graham. What gives me confidence is the way we practice, our separation. I think we are doing a really good job with that, and the mindset is different. We can't come out passive. We've got to come out firing. It's going to take all 11 of us. We've got to play as a team, and we've got to play together. Third-year MCS head coach Chris Cunningham said Rodriguez is the bell cow of his team because of what he means to the Mustangs on both sides of the ball. He's the best receiver and also the best DB, and he's captain for us, Cunningham said. He really impacts us in a lot of ways, goes both ways. He's really the only true two-way starter that we have, and a lot of that is because he can do that. He's able to play well on both sides of the ball for four quarters. That says a lot about him in positions that are really tough when you talk about the safety position and the receiver position. He's a tremendous young man. He's a tremendous leader in our program. He is a fierce, fierce competitor, and I think he's a guy that I want to be on the field as much as possible because of what he brings to the table. When asked if he had a favorite position, Rodriguez said he couldn't pick a side. I love being on the field. I love the game, he said. I've always enjoyed sports. I'm a competitor, and I just love to compete. Being a three-year varsity player, Rodriguez also knows that his experience and leadership will be counted on, especially with the younger players. I take huge pride in it, said Rodriguez about being a leader. I hope I'm a good example for all the younger kids and the other kids around me, too. Hopefully, the way I practice and the way I carry myself show that. I'm encouraging others even when I'm not in the game and I'm off the field for a little bit. I still have to be out there encouraging and helping others. If the backups are getting in, I've got to coach them up. Rodriguez is also trying to build on the success he's had on the football field. Last year, Rodriguez was named as a first-team All-District defensive back, a TAPS Division II All-State honorable mention selection at DB. And then this past summer, he was key player for the Mustangs, who captured the TAPS 7-on-7 state tournament. It definitely boosted the confidence for sure, said Rodriguez about the 7-on-7 title. Being able to play against many DBs from across the state, I saw how each of them play, and I was also able to use my strengths to my advantage. I think I've grown tremendously as a player since my sophomore year and last year. This summer was a big summer for me, and I learned a lot. Just the training that went into the 7-on-7 was very big, and getting to work with these guys was big for our team too, chemistry-wise. Rodriguez hopes that hard work translates into a TAPS Division II state title this season. In the spring, Rodriguez helped the Mustangs win a boys basketball state title in TAPS 5A. It's going to take every single player on the roster, JV included, Rodriguez said. It's going to take all of us to come together and trust each other, trust the coaches. Greenwood breaks ground on multi-purpose practice facility, by Oscar Leroy, sports editor. Greenwood ISD broke ground on Thursday morning for a student multi-purpose facility that will be built next to the J.M. King Memorial Stadium Fieldhouse. The building was part of the 2023 Greenwood School Bond that was passed. It is part of Proposition B that was for the $87 million to be also used for a new student event center that will include a gym and auditorium to be built in the future. The multi-purpose facility will be used not only by the athletics teams, but also by the band and cheerleading squads to train indoors, especially when the weather gets above 100 degrees. Greenwood Superintendent Ariel Elliott said the University Interscholastic League has been discussing limiting outdoor activities during hot weather, and said that if that does come to pass, the school district will be prepared. The 65-yard-long facility will have a turf field, a track surrounding it, and it will also include batting cages and restrooms. Athletically, this building will serve as home to 13 varsity sports. said Greenwood Athletic Director and head football coach Brian Hill. It will also host events like powerlifting meets, band practices, fall festivals, project graduations, but also having the unique ability to serve as an extension of the classroom. With commitment to student excellence also comes the commitment to student safety, Hill added. We are extremely appreciative of the Greenwood community. They have been so generous to provide a facility that will give our students a reprieve when the West Texas sun and the West Texas heat makes that asphalt go north of 170 degrees. The facility was designed by the architects at Park Hill, while Lee Lewis Construction will construct the building, which is expected to be completed by August 2025. This facility will be a mainstay of the Greenwood Ranger student experience. It will be a beacon of school spirit, not only for the people of this school, but also for the community, Hill said. Big Spring grad and former NFL quarterback Johnson dies at 85, played 15 seasons in the league. By Midland Reporter Telegram. Big Spring High grad and former NFL quarterback Charlie Johnson died Tuesday, which was announced by his alma mater, New Mexico State. Johnson was 85. Johnson played 15 seasons in the NFL with the St. Louis Cardinals from 1961 to 1969, the Houston Oilers from 1970 to 1971, and the Denver Broncos from 1972 to 1975. He was the Cardinals' primary starter from the 1962 to 1966, being named to the Pro Bowl in 1963 after throwing for 3,280 yards and 28 touchdowns. Johnson led the Broncos to their first winning season in franchise history in 1973 with a 7-5-2 record. He was later inducted into the Broncos' Ring of Fame. Johnson had a storied career at New Mexico State, where he led the Aggies to 19 wins over two seasons and was the Sun Bowl MVP in consecutive seasons in 1959 to 1960. His 18 touchdown passes led the NCAA in 1959. Johnson's number 33 jersey was later retired by the Aggies. Johnson, a member of Army ROTC at New Mexico State, would serve in active duty in 1967 and worked with NASA as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army Reserve. He later would serve as the head of the Chemical Engineering Department at NMSU from 2000 to 2004. He also was the Aggies' interim head football coach in spring of 2010. Morgan hangs up her cleats. By Anne M. Peterson, Associated Press. Over the course of a career that included two Women's World Cup titles and an Olympic gold medal, Alex Morgan elevated the women's game through her play on the field and activism off it. The 35-year-old Morgan, who said she is pregnant with her second child, announced on Thursday that she is retiring from soccer after a 15-year career. She was near tears in a video posted to social media. This decision wasn't easy, but at the beginning of 2024, I felt in my heart and soul that this was the last season that I would play soccer, she said. Soccer has been a part of me for 30 years, and it was one of the first things that I ever loved. I gave everything to the sport, and what I got in return was more than I could have ever dreamed of. Morgan said that she will play her final match with her club team, the San Antonio Wave of the National Women's Soccer League, on Sunday at Snapdragon Stadium. In addition to World Cup titles in 2015 and 2019, Morgan also won a gold medal with the United States at the 2012 London Olympics and a bronze at the Tokyo Games in 2021. Morgan played in 224 matches for the national team, ninth all-time, with 123 goals, fifth all-time, and 53 assists, ninth all-time. She was named the U.S. Soccer Player of the Year in 2012 and 2018. Her last game with the United States came on June 4, 2024, against South Korea. She was left off the roster that new coach Emma Hayes selected for this year's Paris Olympics.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.